And now the opinion page. Congress still needs to negotiate the exact details of the federal bailout for Wall Street with the Secretary of the Treasury, but we know the general idea. The federal government hopes to set aside as much as $700 billion to buy up bad mortgages and other investments. It may be the most sweeping government intervention to rescue financial institutions since the Great Depression. In an op-ed in Sunday's Washington Post, Sebastian Mallaby noted that an idea that nobody in public office had even mentioned a week ago now seems suddenly inevitable. And he argues this is extremely dangerous, that there are cheaper and better ways to do it. If the government's going to spend $700 billion taxpayer dollars, your money, what should we get for it? 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation and get a link to Sebastian Mallaby's piece on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Sebastian Mallaby is director of the Center for Geoeconomic Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations, and he joins us from a studio there. Nice to have you on the program today.
Good to be with you, Neil.
And you argue that the government shouldn't be buying bad debts, that they should buy equity stakes in the banks themselves.
That's right. I think we want three things from a plan like this. We want it to work in terms of stabilizing the financial system. We want it to work quickly so that it provides an alternative to the ad hoc bailout to bailout, hand-to-mouth sort of stuff we've had in the past week. And we want it preferably not to cost the taxpayers too much. And I think on all those measures, we would be better shape if we had something where you were going to go in and put equity into these banks rather than taking bad loans off their hands.
But you do agree that something big needs to be done and needs to be done soon.
Yes, I think after last week, no one could doubt that.
And I wonder, the version of the bill that we saw come out of the Senate today, or at least mentioned by Senator Christopher Dodd, who's the chairman of the Senate Banking Committee, includes as part of it that the U.S. would get stakes in the companies they're helping out.
Yes, but from what I've read about that, it's a slightly confused suggestion in that the Senate seems to be proposing that on the one hand, the government buys debt, so it gives the banks some money, and in return it gets these bad loans. Okay, so it's got the loans in exchange. Mm-hmm. And now on top of that, it wants to get some kind of equity participation as well. You can do it that way, but it doesn't get around the fundamental problem with any debt purchase, which is that valuing the debt is something that the private sector has been unable to do for the past 12 months. And there's no reason to suppose that the government will be smarter at valuing this very complicated mess of mortgage instruments, which are illiquid, they're not traded, you can't see what price they should be at. They'll be haggling over whether this should be 22 cents on the dollar or 50 cents on the dollar, what should be the discount. I just think going down that route is way more complicated than simply looking up the stock price of a bank and saying, okay, your stock is traded on the New York Stock Exchange, we know what it's worth, and at that value we're going to inject several billion dollars into your balance sheet to give you more stability and more time.
And if you do well on the deal, we'll make some of the profits.
Right, that's right. So what Senator Dodd is doing is he's trying to get that upside for taxpayers, just like my suggestion would do. But I think he's sort of tacking it onto a deal, onto a proposal from the Treasury, which begins by simply being too complicated. And I'm suggesting, you know, get out of that complication. Don't even try to buy bad loans because they're way difficult to value.
But didn't we go through this process or something quite similar to it when the savings banks had a crisis of their own some years ago and they set up the Resolution Trust Company? They had a bunch of bad loans and eventually disposed of them.
Well, unfortunately, that's what a lot of people think. And that's why it's been possible politically to market this plan as something we've done before. We know how to do it. It's not all that radical. But the truth is that what happened with the Resolution Trust Corporation set up in 1989 was fundamentally different. Back then, what you had was savings and loans, thrifts, which had already gone bankrupt. And because they were federally insured, that meant that their loans fell into the lap of the U.S. government, and the U.S. government had to figure out what to do with these loans. Now you have a situation where the Treasury is proposing.
So in other words, they had no choice.
Right. You know, there was insurance already, federal insurance of these thrifts. So when the thrifts went bust, by definition, the government picked up the loans and had to figure out how to sell them. Today, we're talking about buying bad loans from banks which are not bust. So then you get into this difficulty of negotiating which loans you buy, what price you pay for them, and so forth. That's what worries me.
So that since the private market, since the markets can't figure out how much these loans are worth, and as you say, they've been these bad mortgages have been bundled into very complicated instruments of varying types that I'm told I sure don't understand them, and I'm told very few people do. That in fact the government's not going to be any better at figuring out how much to pay for these, and is likely then to get pay too much.
I mean, exactly. And just to give you a sense of the complication, I mean, since my column appeared yesterday in the Washington Post, I've been inundated with emails from a lot of very thoughtful and smart people on Wall Street saying, you know, here's how the Paulson plan could work. And one of them emails me and says, you know, the thing is that if the government came in and offered a low price for bad debts, let's say 40% of what their face value is worth, then it would make a market. You know, people would know that they could offload these debts at 40 cents on the dollar, and so people would be willing to bid 45 or 50 because they knew that if it went wrong for them, they could turn around and sell it to the government. So then you'd get liquidity in these debt markets. But then I get another email from somebody making exactly the same argument, but saying the government should come in and buy not at 40 cents on the dollar, but at 20 cents on the dollar. So, in other words, no one can agree what the price is. And that's going to be the beginning of a huge fight, if this plan gets enacted, a huge fight about how you value this debt, what price you put on it. And there's no one good, simple answer, because the truth is that some debt is probably worth 40 cents, others is worth 20 cents, others is worth 30 and 50 and so on. And so there's no one price that the government can come in on and say, right, we will buy all bad debts at the following price, because bad debts are very, very varied. So there's no way of structuring this in a simple fashion.
We're talking with Sebastian Mallaby of the Council on Foreign Relations about what the taxpayers ought to get for their $700 billion, which is what Congress is talking about spending this week at the urging of the White House and the Secretary of the Treasury. Let's get some callers in on the conversation, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. We'll begin with Mark, and Mark's calling us from Chicopee in Massachusetts.
Hi.
Hi, Mark.
One of the things that we should get, I think, is a some legislation that these mortgage entities can't make political contributions, because the people, like in this case, Chris Dodd and Barney Frank, we were looking at them at least to give warnings that something like this would happen. And I don't think I can have any trust right now in these government officials, that they've really been looking out for us and looking and doing good oversight, if they in fact have been receiving, and in the case of Chris Dodd, even receiving favorable mortgages from Countrywide.
Yeah, Chris Dodd and Barney Frank, respectively, the chairman of the Senate and House Banking Committees. What do you think, Sebastian Mallaby? Have they been derelict in their oversight, and should mortgage companies be barred from political lobbying or contributions?
You know, it's very tough to single out one industry like mortgage companies for this kind of thing when it happens in just about every industry. You could make a similar point about the regulation of any industry you like. Of course, the people who are regulated are giving big amounts of money to people in Congress all the time. So it gets to, I think, a bigger question about the way the political system works, about campaign contributions and so on. I would say, though, that I think the clearest example of political connections sort of messing up what should have been better regulation are the two monster government-affiliated mortgage lenders, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which were taken into government receivership just a few weeks ago. That really was a case where the lobbying power of those two companies, I think, prevented decent regulation and clear rules being set up. And I fear that, you know, the danger is going to be down the line. We haven't seen the last of this. Further lobbying on behalf of those two entities could cause them to be resurrected in a way that makes us live through this experience all over again.
Do you believe that Barney Frank and Chris Dodd should resign?
No, I don't. I don't think they had the primary responsibility for sort of the detailed regulation of these financial institutions.
But at least for the oversight, shouldn't they have been aware of what was going on?
Look, you can point the finger in 100 different directions, but the people who were closer to the specifics of what was going on in financial companies, whether they were mortgage companies, banks on Wall Street, investment banks, whatever, you know, I don't think it's the people who chair committees in Congress who have, in a way, the primary responsibility for that. I don't go that far. Others may differ. It's an opinion call, but I would not go that far.
And voters, at least with Barney Frank, get the opportunity to do that this November, but not likely to happen in Massachusetts. Mark, thanks very much for the call. It's interesting. The Secretary of the Treasury, the bill that he wants Congress to pass would have give him very sweeping powers to take action, presumably to make it fast and efficient, and give him the authority to do things without asking too much. The bill that Senator Dodd is talking about would actually install an oversight board, which would include the chairman of the Fed, people like that. Do you think that's a wise idea?
You know, I think, I mean, I have some sympathy with Secretary Paulson's desire for a very stripped-down legislation that gives him a lot of authority. I just think he is asking for authority to do slightly the wrong thing. I do think that though speed is of the essence, that complicating the plan is in general not a good idea. It was the same thing, by the way, in 1989 when President Bush Sr. announced a bill to create the Resolution Trust Corporation to work out the savings and loans mess. He first said, we want to get this passed in 45 days. And the first thing that Congress said, the congressional leaders of the time, was, yes, we're going to do it very, very quickly. In the end, it took 6 months to pass that bill, precisely because of the kind of back and forth that you're starting to see now between Senator Dodd and the administration.
And they do have an election coming up, so that may focus some minds, too. We're talking with Sebastian Malaby of the Council on Foreign Relations. He's the head of the Center for Geoeconomic Studies there. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And by the way, you can find a link to Sebastian Malaby's op-ed piece, A Bad Bank Rescue, which ran in yesterday's Washington Post, at npr.org/blog of the nation. Let's get another caller on the line, and we'll go to Linda. Linda with us from Elkhart, Indiana.
Yeah, that's right.
Go ahead, please.
I'd like to know that my billions of dollars is not going to bail out another country or foreign country's debt.
That is, some foreign countries and companies say, hey, listen, we made these investments too. Shouldn't we be bailed out, Sebastian Malaby? Is that going to be possible to divorce one from the other?
It's a very, very good question. I've wondered about that myself. On the one hand, I don't see any argument for using U.S. taxpayer money to bail out foreign banks at all. On the other hand, you know, you've got international banks that have subsidiaries in the U.S., which the subsidiaries are U.S. companies. So trying to draw national lines on companies that themselves are not national, they're multinational, is in practice very, very difficult. It's a classic example of how we have national government, but, you know, globalized finance and a globalized economy. So I think the caller is expressing a very understandable concern, which I actually share, but I just think it's difficult in practice to make that clear distinction.
Linda, thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's talk with Stan. Stan with us from Lexington in Massachusetts.
Yes, sir. Thanks for taking my call. I agree 100% with your guest that we should be buying equity and not debt for the reasons stated. And the things I want for my money would be something we asked for in 1992 when mortgage and asset-backed securities were deregulated. They need a mandatory primary and secondary market disclosure system so that the securities can be purchased and valued properly.
Is this a call for greater transparency so we can see what's going on?
Well, transparency as to these securities cannot operate without an exemption from something called the Investment Company Act of 1940. And there was an exemptive rule rammed through the SEC at the trail end of Bush 1 that permits them to operate without a primary or secondary market disclosure system. And all the controls of self-dealing and all of the other things that the 40 Act protects against were wiped out by something called Rule 3A7 on the theory that the rating agencies would police the marketplace, and that was ludicrous. The rating agencies in a totally untenable position.
Sebastian Malaby, can you help us out here and explain what exactly it is that Stan's proposing and would it help or not?
You know, I think he's proposing a variation on a very good idea, which applies more broadly to the financial mess that we're in, namely that there's a lot of trading that goes on in instruments that are not on any kind of exchange, like a stock exchange or even a futures exchange. They are just contracts between private banks and hedge funds and so forth, which trade this stuff, as it's called, over-the-counter, without any guarantee that, you know, next week there'll be anybody around to carry on trading them. There's nobody who's, you know, committed themselves, and this is what I think the call is getting to. There's nobody who's committed themselves.
Actually, I'm really talking about the cash market security itself has no disclosure regime associated with it. As a result, you can't get information about what's in the pool. There should be, this happened in the government securities markets about 15 years ago, and when the government agencies started providing secondary market information, it liquefied the market. Right now, it's illegal to go to the issuer and get information about the pool because of a regulation the SEC put through called Reg FD, and means that you can't get information directly.
So you think there should be more information, in other words, about mortgage-backed securities traded after they've been issued? I think my train of thought earlier does apply to what you're talking about. In other words, we need more transparency.
Go ahead.
I thought we were cut off there.
We will be shortly.
We need more transparency, more information, and the government has a legitimate role in persuading market participants to provide that information and catalyzing it.
Stan, thanks very much for the call. And Sebastian Malaby, thank you so much for your time today.
Great to be with you, Neil.
Sebastian Malaby, A Bad Bank Rescue. His piece ran in yesterday's Washington Post, and he joined us from a studio at the Council on Foreign Relations. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.